Je reconnais cette forêt. Ce n'est pas une forêt ordinaire, c'est une forêt de souvenirs. Mes souvenirs. Cette rivière blanche et sonore, mon adolescence. Ces grands arbres, les hommes que j'aimais. Cet oiseau qui vole, au loin, mon père disparaît. Mes souvenirs ne sont plus des souvenirs. Ils sont là, vivants, près de moi. Ils dansent et m'enlacent, chantent et me sourient.
Hey, 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 welcome, 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 welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're doing well. Hope everything's going all right. Oh, no, not that one. Not that one. I hope you're doing good, though. I hope everybody is all right. I hope everything's going good. Welcome, welcome back. All right, so tonight we have a short one, so I was thinking, you know, let's take a look at the IRA. I stumbled across some IRA stuff. I thought, you know, we've never looked at the Irish Republican Army and what the story was there. I've heard a couple different things. The mainstream story is said to be, well, bunk. I don't know. I've heard other suggestions, especially from anti-Semites, that they wanted to break up the island. You know, the Jews wanted to break up the island and stuff. I don't know if that's true. Hopefully we can find out right now. That's the idea. We're going to take a look and see what we see. We're going to find out, or so we hope. All the same, I think it should be interesting. I mean, I think the story of what happened with the IRA fighting the British Empire and the what's known as the Troubles, I think that's an interesting story. And it's a story of whites fighting whites, for one thing. But it's a story supposedly over religious conflict. So I think that's an interesting story nonetheless. So we're going to take a look at all this tonight. Alright. Got a pretty cool new drop. Said I was gonna do it. I need to make a lot more though. There it is. It'll be useful. I know it. I just know it. I know it's going to be useful. Is Barrett related to the IRA guy? I don't know. I mean, I know he's like a Irish nationalist politician guy. I don't know if he's... Is he connected to the IRA?
To know that Israel first is the actual policy.
Based that he said that. All right. Well, you know what? Let's go. It's nice to see a based Justin instead of a fucking gay one. All right. Let's go ahead and get started. So let's go ahead and look around and see what we got here. So this is some of the consequences. This is some of the reality of what it was like. And this is as soon as 1992. So this is not that long ago. Now this has been a thing that went on from the 70s all the way into the 90s. In 1993, you have the Bishop's Gate bombing, which is this.
A man was discovered in the rubble today, hours after the huge bomb blast that shattered the City of London. More than 30 other people were wounded in a shower of glass. Police tonight said the IRA had brought death again so soon after the Warrington outrage. The device had been planted in a lorry next to the NatWest Tower, not far from last year's Baltic Exchange bombing.
This goes back a long ways. Let me see if I can go over the story in the broad outlines of what happened with the IRA. So its origins begin in 1916 to 1922. First, in 1916, you have the Easter Rising. Irish Republicans landed an armed insurrection against British rule in Dublin, declaring an Irish Republic. It failed militarily, but radicalized public opinion. Then you have the Anglo-Irish War from 1919 until 1921. The IRA formed the Irish Volunteers, fought a guerrilla war against British forces. In 1921, you have the partition of Ireland, resulting from the Anglo-Irish Treaty. Ireland was split. You now have the Irish Free State. You have the Irish Free State, which is now the Republic of Ireland in the South, largely Catholic and nationalist. And then you have Northern Ireland, which was remaining part of the United Kingdom, with a Protestant Unionist majority and a Catholic nationalist minority. This partition laid the groundwork for decades of tension. Pre-Troubles tensions. So from 1922 until 1960s, Northern Ireland was effectively a Protestant-dominated state, where the Catholic minority faced systemic discrimination in housing, jobs, and voting, a biased police force, and the Royal Ulster Constabulary, or RCU, and the Ulster Special Constabulary, or B-Specials, seen as anti-Catholic paramilitaries. Although the IRA continued to exist, it had little public support for most of this period. So then the Troubles begin. From the late 60s to the early 70s, the civil rights movement kicks off, inspired by the U.S. Civil rights movement. Catholics in Northern Ireland protested for equal rights. Peaceful marches were attacked by police and loyalist mobs. In 1969, the situation exploded. There was a key trigger. The Battle of Bogside in 1969, a major riot in Derry after police attacked Catholic residents. The event is often seen as the start of the Troubles. The British Army was deployed, but soon Catholics turned against them, seeing them as occupiers. By the 1970s, you see the rise of the Provisional IRA. The original IRA split in 1969. There is the original IRA, Marxist and more political. Then you have the Provisional IRA, which is militant and dominant, focused on armed struggle to end British rule in Northern Ireland. The Provisional IRA waged a full-scale campaign, bombings, shootings, assassinations. Targets included British soldiers, police, loyalists, and civilians. Major events. Bloody Sunday, 1972. Reminds me of this thing. Reminds me of this shit. Listen to the fucking U2 song. I just came to mind. All right. Yeah, it's also interesting. It does use like footage or, I don't know, reenacted footage for this. Anywho. All right. Bloody Sunday. British paratroopers shot dead 14 unarmed civil rights protesters. In Derry. This galvanized nationalist support for the IRA and intensified the conflict. Internment without trial. So from 1971, suspected IRA members were jailed without trial, mostly Catholics. Worsened tensions, seen as collective punishment. Hunger strikes, 1981. IRA prisoners led by Bobby Sands demanded political status. Sands was elected as a member of parliament during the strike, but died after 66 days. His death drew global attention and spurred political support for Sinn Féin, the IRA's political wing. While the IRA waged a war to reunite Ireland, loyalist groups, examples being the UVF and UDA, formed to defend the Union with Britain. They targeted Catholic civilians, sometimes in retaliation, and collaborated at times with elements of British intelligence in murky operations. Let's see. This spurred a lot of collateral damage and casualties. Over 30 years, 3,500 were killed, including civilians, police, soldiers, and militants, tens of thousands injured, and this deeply polarized their society. Many areas were ethnically segregated by walls or peace lines. By the 1990s, they had a peace process. Years of stalemate led to negotiations. The IRA began to shift towards politics, though not without internal splits. Key developments. In 1994, the IRA ceasefire announced. 1998, Good Friday Agreement was signed, power-sharing government in Northern Ireland. Disarmament of paramilitaries. Recognition of both Irish and British identities. Sinn Féin, once considered the, quote, political wing of the IRA, became a major legitimate political party. The IRA formally ended its armed campaign in 2005. Wow, I didn't know it went on that long. Jesus, I thought it ended in the 90s completely. Loyalist and dissident Republican groups still exist, but are fringe. Sectarian tensions and sporadic violence remain, especially during parades or anniversaries. This continues. This is not entirely finished, even at this point. Let's move on with more of this. So I want to show some of this stuff. So, all right, that's the bombing. I think it's mostly just footage of. Yeah, it shows you some of the consequences. This is the 93 bombing in Bishopsgate. Mostly like a lot of construction sounds and, you know, damage, basically. All right, in London's financial center. pretty intense. They just fucking blew up a big ass fucking building there in London. That's pretty crazy. All right, so this is an interview with the leader in 1972. This is right as it kicks up into high gear. Right as it kicks into high gear. Smiles says, Ireland seems to be ahead of the curve in white replacement. Counter reaction. I have enough of their blood to hope they regain their country. Well, you know, Smiles, I think that they got a good chance. I mean, look, there's some really ugliness to all this, but there's also an upside, right? There's the militancy. They're not going to just bend over and take it, that they're going to fucking fight back. And I think that that militancy lives on. I don't think it's just disappeared. I think it's still with them. It still runs in their blood. So, absolutely true. Lose you, Smiles. Yeah, let's see what he has to say. This is as this thing is kicking up into high gear. So let's see what his opinions are here.
Mr. McStephan, what was your reaction this week to the news of the death of a second British soldier?
Well, my reaction as a member of the IRA would be another fatal casualty for Crown Forces. A certain amount of satisfaction. But on the personal level, of course, we realize that this is a terrible personal tragedy for some family, that this is possibly some young woman being left a widow, possibly children being left without a father, somebody's son has been killed. But and this is the whole tragedy of the situation in Ireland. British troops are not wanted, and while they are forced to remain here, against the will of many of them, I'm sure, tragedies like this are obviously going to continue.
Were these deaths an advantage or a disadvantage to the IRA?
The deaths of the British soldiers? I would say that the deaths of British troops in Ireland for the first time in 50 years would be a definite advantage to the IRA.
Why is that?
Well, it has, without any doubt, it's done more than anything over the past 50 years to bring it home to the British public that unless their troops are withdrawn from Ireland, unless the just demands of the Irish people are met, that these tragedies are going to increase.
You can see this is viewed as an occupation.
So that you see a political advantage in British troops being killed?
Yes.
The interviewer is like, what? Like, I don't even understand. How? How? Like, what? Huh? No. I'm not allowed to do that. No. It's interesting. That. Funny, Callahan. Yeah, so let's look at some of the other consequences here. So this is kind of how it accelerated from, you know, a conflict into a full-blown, bloody, like, localized war, I guess, like a civil war of sorts, a sort of smaller-scale civil war. This should go over the history pretty clearly, and we're going to take a look at what happened here. I had heard rumors, or I guess I'll call it that, people in chat kind of saying these kind of things, that there was some sort of Jew role in this. I don't know. I mean, it could just simply be like an internal conflict. Like there was conflicts in Europe before like the Jews were in power. So I don't want to just like jump to they did it all kind of thing. It's a little too easy. Like if you know, it can be true, it can also not be true. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know the backstory specifically with this. I don't think you're gonna. I went looking to see if I could find like some place that would kind of would be willing to talk about that sort of thing in regards to this, and you can't really find it. You know, I found some things that actually go over it pretty big detail, but I don't find anything saying like the Jews made this happen. Not really. I mean, I think it is basically what this is being described as. That this is a sort of occupational conflict where the Protestant British worldview is being forced on them, and they have a 98% Catholic population, and this was a conflict seemingly of both religion and ethnic identity, because the ethnic identity of the British and the Irish are different. It's not the same. You know, to Americans, we tend to look on it as sort of all the same thing, but it really isn't. And to them, they see it as quite different.
On the afternoon of the 30th of January 1972, a civil rights march passed through the streets of Derry, Londonderry. The protesters, around 50,000 strong, tried to move towards the city centre, but were blocked by the British Army. Though most of the crowd moved on to the Bogside, a no-go area for British forces, others began to throw stones at the soldiers. And soon afterwards, troops of the Parachute Regiment were then ordered to move into the Bogside and begin arresting the crowd.
Over the next half an hour, one para would open fire on the demonstrators, leaving 26 injured and killing 13. A 14th man would die several months later. This Humber pig here, IWM London, was on...
That motherfucker. Yeah, we didn't really have those in the United States until after 9/11. After that, they got those. Like, the military budgets came in, and they started to, you know, give the American police that sort of shit. Right. Yeah. Yep. I don't think it's good that a police department has to have that sort of stuff. I mean, I guess they're saying this to the military, but still, I mean, you don't want to see that sort of shit rolling down like the center of your town. It's not very comforting. Not very, like, you know what I mean? It just gives that military occupation vibe pretty hardcore.
Strength with one para at the time of Bloody Sunday. Now, we don't actually know if it was actually there on the day, but it certainly was one of their vehicles. Bloody Sunday was probably one of the most famous or infamous incidents of the Troubles. However, it was just one of many terrible incidents in what became the bloodiest year of the Troubles.
In the first episode of our Troubles series, we explored the origins of the conflict. And now, with the British Army deployed, a deadly multi-sided war began to be waged on Northern Irish streets. The violence would cost thousands of lives, mostly civilian. But within the violence, all the sides were beginning to change. By the 1980s, they would adopt new strategies that would shape the future of Northern Ireland. The events of Bloody Sunday were a source of outrage around the world. 3 days later, the British Embassy in Dublin was burnt to the ground by protesters incensed by the killings. As the violence grew, the British Prime Minister, Edward Heath, felt he had no choice but to suspend the Northern Irish Parliament at Stormont and impose direct rule from Westminster. This was intended as a short-term measure, but for the provisional IRA, it was exactly what they wanted.
The IRA felt quite triumphant at the time. They wanted Britain drawn further into the conflict. They could then frame the narrative more as they wished to see it. The IRA in 72 were operating using the car bomb, a relatively indiscriminate form of weaponry, as well as open confrontation with the army. However, the way the IRA operated would change in a matter of a few years, and they would reorganise themselves and settle themselves in for what they knew would be a much longer struggle.
The violence continued to intensify throughout the rest of 1972. In response to Bloody Sunday, the official IRA bombed the HQ of the Parachute Regiment in Aldershot, but only killed civilians. The backlash from this and other elements of their campaign led them to declare a ceasefire soon afterwards. From that point onwards, the Provisional IRA became the majority faction in the Republican movement. In July, they enacted their own reprisal for Bloody Sunday, detonating 22 bombs across Belfast in what became known as Bloody Friday. 9 people were killed and around 130 injured in the space of just 75 minutes. In response, the British Army began Operation Motorman, their biggest operation since Suez. Over 30,000 troops, assisted by tanks, went into clear no-go areas controlled by Republican paramilitaries.
During Operation Motorman, British troops would crash through these impromptu barriers in vehicles like the Humber Pig. For soldiers, it was highly protective, but to civilians, it would have seemed an oppressive and frightening tool. As far as trying to catch the people involved, largely the Republican paramilitaries had got away, However, the British were laying down a marker. They were prepared to use force to clear these areas, and there was no place they felt they couldn't go. On top of this, in an attempt to clamp down the violence, British also sought to introduce a method that would get round the intimidation of jurors and witnesses through what were known as diplock courts, where a sole judge would sit and would try the accused without any witnesses and without any jury. This was seen as enough.
That's pretty intense. Just have a single judge just sitting there and like, yeah, you're guilty.
Effective method to get round any form of intimidation.
The Republican anger at this latest British intervention was palpable, and as 1972 came to an end, the Provisional IRA were set to attack the UK mainland for the first time. On Thursday, the 8th of March 1973, Provisional IRA bombs exploded at the Old Bailey and in Whitehall in London. The attacks claimed one life and injured over 240. It was the beginning of a new phase of the Troubles. On May 17, 1974, the UVF detonated four car bombs in Dublin and Monaghan in the Republic of Ireland. 33 people and one unborn child were killed in the deadliest attack of the Troubles. But at the same time, diplomatic efforts were beginning to emerge. A new Northern Irish Assembly was founded in 1973, made up of moderate parties from all sides. They approved the Sunningdale Agreement, a power-sharing executive with involvement from the Republic of Ireland. At the time, it truly seemed like the beginnings of peace in the conflict, but it was not to be. In May, the Ulster Workers' Council called a general strike and forced the loyalist leader of the executive to resign, and soon afterwards, the agreement collapsed. The pattern of violence had been set, and extremists on both sides now held enough sway to derail any peace attempt. For the British government, the failure of Sunningdale left some in doubt over Britain's future in Northern Ireland, but peace attempts continued nonetheless. Backdoor negotiations had begun in 1972, but towards the end of 1974, they began to bear fruit. The ban on the IRA's political wing, Sinn Féin, was lifted and planned.
Dublin, 2025. The most popular name is now Mohamhead. Mohamhead. And Jesus. Well, you know, I don't know. The upside of that is like somebody said, Smile said, you know, at least they're of any population. Due to this history of this sort of militant conflict, like maybe they are less likely to just take it. You know, there were, let me see if I can find some examples. There were instances where the police stations and shit were burned down. In Ireland, where they were throwing, you know, Molotovs at cop cars and shit like this. This is like a year ago. This is not a long time ago. Let's see. Yeah, the Irish anti-migrant movement really gained some pretty good steam. Yeah, here we go. Yeah. Kind of like to see it. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm not supposed to say that, I guess, but you kind of like to see it. It's some serious pushback. You know, they're not fucking around. Got him! That one got in. pretty intense. I do like the take no shit kind of thing. I mean, they're not fucking around. They're not going to take it. And they're going to chuck a Molotov at you, bitch. And that's pretty, kind of pretty cool. Kind of good to see. It is nice to see some white people that just aren't just taking it, you know, because there is too many places where it's just tolerated, this shit. Rebel Science, what's up, man? He says, oh, wait, I forgot that he made it different how that works. There it is. He says, love the show. Important history. Ireland needs a new mobilization against Kike supremacy and mass migration. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. This dude might be the guy to lead it, actually. This dude. Let's see.
And so, there seems to be a brief reprieve fully loaded economic policy has either failed, succeeded, or more importantly, in terms of the halt on tariffs, that anything has changed. That fundamental policy of returning the manufacturing base to the United States is based on the fact that Donald Trump is representative of, now he does not personify, he is representative of, when the phrase America first is used in political discourse, you can know that Israel first is the actual policy.
Based incorrect. Hell, Rebel Science. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, this guy's he's pretty based. And I saw a really good interview with him on, where was it? Oh, I think it was, I think it was on Borecast, actually. Yeah, I think it was Borjack on Borecast, I believe. Wow, okay. All right, yeah. It was a really good interview. And, yeah, they were going pretty hard. They were not fucking around. It was nice to see.
And so, there seems to be a brief reprieve for Ireland in terms of its complete and utter dependence on the phantom economics that we have engaged in over particularly the past 20 years. But that is, as I said, only apparent. Because a country without a manufacturing base, a country that does not make things and sell things that it has made, is not a fundamentally sound economy. It is, and I'm old enough to remember this as a song, it is the loads of money economy. That's where we are. The money is not here for the investment. The money is not here for the jobs. The money is only here for the money. The loads of money economy. And behind that comes loads of trouble. And that is the tumultuous time in which we are heading into. It is pointless for me to predict exact news events.
What do you think, Rebel Science? Do you think they can do it? I probably can't say it right, but it's called the political party they started is called Pan Eritrean, I guess. Eritrean, I think. Let's see, what are they? Let's see what they said. It's like an introductory thing. Oh, it's just like an intro bumper thing. This dude's wife is based as fuck on Twitter. She's always going hard. Clan Aryan, I guess, like Aryan. It's Elvish. I think it might be Aryan. That might be how they spell Aryan. Aryan. How do you pronounce that? It's this. Something like this. Like that. Plan Irian? Shane from TRS says Clan Aaron. He might not be saying it right. I don't know. Maybe he is. I have no idea. Do we have any Irishmen in the house? I think we did have some Irish people like come through. I don't know if they're here often or what, but it would be cool. It would be cool. Rebel Science says white civilization is much stronger than they suspect. I predict that all white nations will rise up and crush the enemy underfoot. Based. Let's hope so. Let's hope so. I think, like, look, I think the strength is there. I think it's just dormant. That's all. It hasn't gone anywhere. I mean, you know, the collective white power is out of shape. You know, it's all tired and, you know, beat down, but it's not like dead or nothing. I mean, it can be revived. It absolutely can be revived. There's no reason to be blackpilled about that in any kind of long-term sense. It's just, you know, it's all fucking hungover and overweight and out of shape and tired and not strong enough. But ultimately, the strength is in there. The strength of spirit is still in there. And it can be revived. And it can be revived fast. Like, that's the thing. Like, this is this idea that this would take, like, such a long time or something. No, I don't think so. I think it could be revived in a matter of, you know, under a year, probably a matter of months. Under the right conditions where necessity forces the hand of fate. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think it could be revived pretty fucking quick. You know? I think so. Why is there no sound? There should be sound. I see sound levels, so. I think you're deaf, 14 words. I think you're deaf. You're deaf, bro. No, there's sound. Her sound. Ireland, Clan Ireland. Oh, okay. How does he spell it? Interesting. This is in Gaelic, yeah? I would assume it's in Gaelic. I mean, all their stuff is in Gaelic. It's like, that's how it's supposed to be. You know, that's a serious, like, ethno-nationalist thing where they're not even going to speak the English, the language of the occupier. Yeah. What's this? Oh, yeah, this is the inauguration.
A Grinny Oishna, a Cardigail. Members and supporters of Clan Éireann and Unskianar Shuinte, the national shield of Clan Éireann, our new nationalist group, which was formed for the purpose of representing authentic Irish nationalism in the 21st century. No better place to come than here to Béal na Blá for the anniversary and commemoration of the death of General Michael Collins. Because here, even the weather is expressing the gloom of what occurred on this day so many years ago. If you're opposed to the treaty of 1921...
You know, Callahan, I have a suggestion for you, man. Like, instead of the drama shit, man, you know, you should just focus on being like scene historian or something. You have a pretty good knack of that, dude, actually. You know, it's actually fairly impressive. You know a lot of shit about all this stuff, and you know, no reason to squander that. I mean, I think that's got a lot more legs on it for a thing people would be interested in than, like, you know, the drama fag storm. You know, that shit passes. That shit comes and goes. It gets old. People get tired of it. You know, the Jerry Springer shit is fun for, you know, a little while. Then people are like, oh, this again. Being a scene historian or a nationalism historian, that has some value, you know. That's not just like trashy shit, you know. It's got a value to it. I think that's got a value to it, especially when, like, you know, there really isn't a good base of that. Like, it's not. You know, this is one of the idea of doing these series things, right? Robot voice. What is it? When is it getting fucked up? Let me put on the headphones, see if it's something weird coming out. What? Is it just Bill or is that somebody else? Does anybody else hear that? I mean, I don't... Should be fine. Fuck. Robot voice. It's probably you, Bill. Hey, hey, test, test. No, it sounds fine, man. What are you talking about? Nigga, what? Sounds fine, dude. Shit sounds fine. What are you talking about? He's high on cracking shit, nigga. Shit. Yeah, I don't even know, man. I think it's just Bill's fucking broke-ass phone. Just broke-ass phone speakers are all glitching out. The stream the other night read poems from TSLA. Well, that's good. I mean, that's cool. It's not bad or anything. That's not what I mean, though. I mean, like, we're talking about the other day about all the Glowniger shit and all that, but, like, you know, people don't know, like, they don't know the history of all this stuff. If you've seen it all, if you've been around for decades, there's a big value in that. I think, you know, a lot of times people show up to this shit and they don't know, like, what all this stuff is, you know? And even if you've been around for a while, like, there's some stuff that's just before you showed up and it's not really, like, laid out or documented very well, you know? But, yeah, anyway, everybody else says it sounds fine. It's this year. it's something on your end, man. Your fault, I blame you. What's up? What's going on, Stout? Shit.
Then what happened here is perhaps just a personal tragedy that happened to a particular man who signed the wrong treaty. But if you come from the perspective, the broader perspective of Irish history and Irish manhood, you realize that more than one man died here, and that there was more than one tragedy here. That the great tragedy of the Irish independence movement, which was hundreds and hundreds of years old, and yet here at this corner of County Cork, the great disaster happened. The man who should have led Ireland in its first years of freedom and independence. Whatever you think about how much freedom we have, or whatever you think about the limitations on the treaty, it was, as he said, our freedom to achieve freedom. And yet, by the roadside here, he died. Shot, who knows? The conspiracy theories abound as to whether he was shot by the Free State side or whether he was shot straightforwardly by the Republican ambush. But throughout the country, when it happened, pro and anti-treaty alike recognized that a great disaster had befallen us, where we had lost that great man, of whatever his faults and whatever his virtues. The freedom to achieve freedom that he believed he had brought home was gone, because it would be betrayed by his successors in the Free State government. And it would be betrayed and betrayed and betrayed again. The six counties of the north would be abandoned. The Boundary Commission would come of nothing. The membership of Ireland of the Commonwealth would continue and continue and continue almost forever. There seemed to be no end to Cosgrave's government's willingness to accept the heel of the British Empire still upon the neck of the Irish people. And we meet to commemorate this great man, General Michael Collins, but also to share in that sadness of the loss.
Michael Collins, let me see if I can find up here. Stop playing. Here it is. This is General Michael Collins, of which he speaks. British Pathé. Looks very similar, doesn't he? A lot of genetic similarity there in those two. Well, it's a silent film. No kidding. Well, that's really an old shit. It's 1922. Dang. Old film, bro. Okay. Snoop. Pretty good fictional depictions of it. Fictional depiction. Here's a fictional one. Well, it'll have sound anyway.
Do it. Fire! How would you like a new costume?
This is from the movie Michael Collins, and that's what Miles mentions here. I saw a movie a long time ago called Michael Collins. Yes, this is indeed what this is from, I believe. This is another one from that same movie.
Show me the ringleaders of this little farce.
Look, let's actually do this one instead. That one's kind of just about their execution.
The fact that the candidate you're being asked to vote for
speech
is at this moment rotting in an English jail shouldn't put you off. So wasn't I in one myself till a week ago. They can jail us. They can shoot us. They can even conscript us. They can use us as cannon fodder in the Somme. But, we have a weapon more powerful than any in the whole arsenal of their British Empire. And that weapon is our refusal. Our refusal to bow to any order but our own. Any institution but our own. Our friends at the Royal Irish Constabulary would like to shut me up. Jail me again. Shoot me. Who knows? But I'd like you to send them a message. If they shut me up, who'll take my place? Who's going to take my place? I can't hear you. Who'll take my place? If they shut you up.
Yeah, I almost want to see it. It might be a good movie. Unfortunately, well, Smile said as well is probably right. Yeah, Liam Neeson went on an apology tour concerning his reaction to a Jigger crime before he was a star. Yeah, no, of course. Of course, it's very sad. Very sad. The cuckery is out of control. Out of control. But anyway, let's get back into what we're actually talking about here. So, I think we could kind of go deeper into the Michael Collins thing because he was. Let me go right here. So Michael Collins, or I would just say that I can't do the Irish Gaelic, but it'd be like Michael O'Callaghan, I think, something like that. Was an Irish revolutionary soldier and politician who was a leading figure in the early 20th century struggle for Irish independence during the War of Independence. He was director of intelligence for the Irish Republican Army and a government minister of the self-declared Irish Republic. He was then chairman of the provisional government of the Irish Free State from January 1922 and commander-in-chief of the National Army from July until his death in an ambush in August 1922 during the Civil War. Goes on a little much more specifics, but that gives you a general idea. So he also rose through the ranks of the Irish Volunteers and the Sinn Féin. So, like it said in the beginning there, the Sinn Féin became like a legitimate political party. Didn't start that way, eventually became that way. Yeah, exactly. Of an expert, right?
Hello, fellow Irishmen.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a lot of that going on. I'm sure that was a thing. Anyway, let's go back to actual Irishmen.
And yet, we have to look ahead. We have to understand that we are, for our time in the 21st century, beholden, duty-bound, no choice, but to meet again in a perilous time, on a gloomy day, in this edge of County Cork. A perilous time. Perhaps even in many ways more perilous. Because what we're talking about now is the very existence of the Irish nation. Not a sovereign republic or a free state or some political formula, but the actual existence of the Irish nation as a nation and as a people. And not since the Great Famine has the existential question of whether Ireland shall be or not be, whether the Irish people shall live or not live, been in the balance. But it is in the balance now, and it has been put in the balance by mass immigration specifically. Ireland is no longer Irish. In the total sense of the word, we have given many areas over, and our government has colluded in giving many areas over to foreigners of all descriptions. Some of those foreigners are Europeans, and yes, in the long run and in small numbers, they could assimilate, but not in the numbers in which they have come. And we look at the people who are supposed to have come from the Ukraine. Yet it is common knowledge to anybody who actually knows what they're talking about that a Ukrainian passport can be bought on eBay. And mm-hmm. It's not even that expensive. And so how many Ukrainians are Ukrainian anyway?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everywhere we find IPAS centers. So-called protection centers. When you Look at the people who are crowding into these protection centres. You see, they are not the kind of people who need protecting. In fact, the key question needs to be asked. If they did flee a war-torn country, if they did flee for their own safety, why did they leave their wives and their children behind? What kind of men are they in their 20s, their 30s, and their 40s who have come here on their own for safety and protection from Ireland? If they say there is a war in their own country, if they say their women and children are in danger, if they say they are in danger. No, we owe these people nothing. We owe these people nothing, even if they were telling the truth, and largely most of the time they are not. And so it has fallen to us in the 21st century to be the guardians of the Irish nation in this existential struggle. And we have no Michael Collins to lead us. And thus, we must lead ourselves. Thus, we must guard Ireland with our own hands. For there is no saviour to come to our aid. Tá na Éireann exists as a political organisation that people can join and be involved in and be part of this struggle. And we know that there will be a desperate effort to silence us politically, not just in the media, not just in terms of the coverage we get in newspapers or the lies that are told about us, but literally, physically, we know this. Because some of the people behind me were involved in the National Party before, and they were there at the Ardes when the communists came to what would have been regarded as a much more moderate expression of national identity. With
their banner says, go nationalist or go extinct. I do like these polarizing messages, these force them to choose messages. Patton! I gotta learn this new system. When I click it, it doesn't go over like it used to. He said, they all need to go back now. Get them out. Get them out of here. That's right. Drag their asses the fuck out. You know, look, for Ireland, it's particularly bad because Ireland is not a huge place, right? I mean, America, I mean, it's bad anywhere. It's bad when they come flushing into any white country. But in Ireland, you know, it's a small little island and they come pouring in by the boatload. You have let me see if I can find some updated stats on migrants into Ireland. It's fucked up. It's like way fucked up. You know, you're talking about like 500,000 a year, I think it was, which is crazy. It's like a crazy, yeah. They're going to be replaced in no time, and that's what they're faced with. So it's very serious. It's not like a we'll just, you know, wait this out and play the long game. Like no, this is very, very serious. Hail to you, Patton. And no, it is very serious. Let me see if I can look it up. It's got to be a. I got to be able to find that here. Let's see, just 2024. In the 12 months to April 2024, Ireland saw a high influx of immigrants. So it's just invaders of all stripes, with 149,200 arriving. So it's almost 150,000, the highest in 17 years. Simultaneously, emigration also reached its highest level since 2015, with almost 70,000 people leaving. This resulted in a net migration. Yeah, so, well, that's not really the case, though, right? So what happens is the actual Irish people are leaving to go to the mainland UK or whatever, right? And the ground replacements are coming in and swapping them out. That's basically it. Of course, you can't really see it. This is by age. Can I get like an ethnicity or something? Because they're not gonna do it by race. That would be too helpful. Because yeah, this is where they're leaving to. This is the emigration, so leaving. Whoa. Okay. Hail Patton. I'm gonna have to get used to this new thing. He moved the button to put the comment on screen. But anyway, yes. So this is where they're going. Blue is. It doesn't make sense. Emigration from Ireland, national group percentages. Wait, I guess that would be Irish leaving Ireland, British leaving Ireland, EU citizens leaving Ireland. It's a bit confusing. Not a great breakdown there. Population change. See, the thing is, we want to know, like, racially, though. That's our concern, and it's very hard to figure that out because they deliberately omit that because it would give you a much clearer picture of what's going on. Ireland's usual resident population is a little under 500,000. I mean, sorry, 5 million, or a little under 5 million. That's not a very big population. I mean, a lot of American states are have that kind of population. Okay, so Irish nationals make up the majority of 87%, non-Irish nationals of 12%. Let's see. 2019, 12,000 emigrated from Ireland to the UK, right? So I think that that's what they're saying, though, is they're saying it went way up. Let's see. Find some more understandings here. Statistica. Let's see what they got to say for themselves. Mike, fuck off. No. You get away from me. No. I say no to you. No to you, sir. What? I'm going to pay you $200. Are you fucking high? You out of your goddamn motherfucking mind? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Absolutely, I refuse. Let's see. There's got to be another way. There's got to be another way. All right, let's see. It's not even very updated. Yeah, that's still only up to 2022. That's not good. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Immigration to Ireland hits. Immigration to Ireland hits 17-year high as emigration also rises. Going in goes way up. Going out also rises. 150,000 people came in. It's not going to tell you that. I want to know, like, what do they look like? Show me what they look like. Gives you an idea. Man, how come they just won't tell me the truth? I want to know, like, what kind of race are they now? Are we talking about, like, Africans? You get that, though. Like, it's pretty fucked up. Let's see what this says. I'm looking for, like, who's who. We got some, like, races here or something? I want some races. All right. It says foreign-born population. It's kind of, it's not it. I don't know what I'm looking for either. Let me see. Yeah, I think that's probably going to have to be good enough for now because I can't find what I'm looking for. I really want to find a racial breakdown of who's who coming in. I don't think there are other white people is what I'm trying to get at. I think that there's always been some that are just other various white ethnicities, but I think you're also getting a bunch that are Africans and Muslims and stuff. It's like Callahan said earlier that the number one baby name now, male baby name in Dublin is now Mohammed. Mohammed. Awesome. Fucking perfect. Fuckers. All right. Gross. Yeah, that's pretty messed up too, this thing. Oh, take the link. Copy. Ireland has the most illegal migrants in the EU per head of population. 1.3 million illegal immigrants were found in the EU in 2023, a 13% jump in 1 year. Jesus. Yeah, Mohammed McStabby. Right, right, of course. Of course, Mohammed McFace Stabby. Talk about a non-asset. Let's see if I could find. There's probably some crazy videos on this too. Let's see. Let's see what this says. This might be what I'm looking for. I don't want it to be, if it's too long, I do all that. I just want to see.
So, I was born in this country. I was raised in this country. I lived in this country in my entire life. I don't feel safe here. I don't feel safe here. That's not right.
You are never getting your country back.
Wow. Holy shit. The balls on this fucking bitch. God damn, dude. That's that Africanized attitude that we all know so well. Holy shit.
You never get your country back, whiny.
Yeah, you'll say that right until you're frog marched onto the fucking boat. Jesus.
Ireland, famed for its rolling green hills, rich history, and deep cultural roots. But is that identity under threat? In just 2 days, 5,000 people from 130 different countries were granted Irish citizenship, a record-breaking number.
Whoa.
Part of a rapidly expanding naturalization process that has seen over 200,000 new Irish citizens since 2011. But here's the real question. Is this about diversity or is it about votes? Are Ireland's leaders reshaping the nation's demographics for political gain? Is the government importing a new voter base?
No, they're reshaping it for Shlomo's preferences is what they're redoing. It's not for political gain. This is the thing that always pisses me off. They make it like it's about votes. Like, sorry, no. The whole voting, like, partisan politics thing, that's a puppet show. Make you think that's how it works. That's what that's there for. It's being reshaped because Shlomo wants it reshaped. That's why.
Let's look at the numbers. In 2023, Ireland processed 20,000 citizenship applications.
Ooh.
By 2024, that number soared to 31,000. Processing
Ooh.
Time cut nearly in half from 15 months to just 8. The system is being streamlined, and the message is clear. Ireland is opening its doors faster than ever before.
Ooh.
And the biggest group gaining citizenship? Asians, followed by Britishers, Brazilians, and Romanians.
When they say Asians, they mean Muslims, by the way. This is some sort of weird... I don't know why they do this. I mean, I think it's to cover it up. That's what I think it is. But this is some weird thing that they do in the UK, where they try to, like, cover up the Muslim invasion thing by calling them Asians. Asians. They mean Muslims. They mean Muslims. Brown Muslims.
In total, over 180 nationalities have been naturalized. Now, migration isn't new. People have always moved for work, education, and opportunity. But the sheer scale at which Ireland is granting citizenship raises serious questions.
A little small place.
Why the sudden acceleration? Who benefits? And at what cost to native Irish citizens? Meanwhile, many in the original Irish population are deep.
Who benefits indeed? Who does? Who does? Who indeed?
Deeply concerned. They fear their culture is being eroded by the rapid pace of immigration. Their towns, traditions, and way of life are changing before their eyes, and many feel powerless to stop it.
So, I was born
the
in this
samurai
country,
are invading Ireland. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. The samurai are invading Ireland. Yeah. That's a good one. God damn, I keep clicking the wrong button. Odious! Wait, well, let's see what he said. What did he give me there? What did he give me? What'd that be? What'd that be? Damn it. What'd that be in sheet? Let me see what he gave me here. What'd he give me? Oh, yeah, this dude. I forgot about this dude. Good point. We'll pop that up.
In this country in my entire life.
Odious!
And I'm somebody who grew up, like I said, in a fairly hard council estate. And I don't feel safe here. I don't feel safe here. That's not right.
Council estate's like welfare. It's like a, it'd be Section 8 housing in America, basically. It's state-funded housing.
I'm wondering how many other people feel this way.
Government officials call it an inclusive vision. Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan says citizenship isn't just about getting an Irish passport.
It's about belonging.
He urges new citizens to actively contribute to society. But let's be blunt. Does the government really care about integration? Or are they more interested in securing future votes from a growing migrant population? Ireland's political landscape is shifting. The ruling class knows that new citizens will eventually become new voters. And with the traditional Irish population shrinking, mass immigration could be a strategic move to reshape Ireland's electorate in favor of those in power. Let's talk about impact. More people means more pressure on housing, healthcare, and infrastructure. Wages are under strain. Jobs are getting more competitive. And what about cultural identity? Ireland has a unique history, language, and traditions. But how much change is too much? When does diversity become dilution?
You are never getting your country back.
Yeah, you hope. Balls on this fucking
Many new
Negress.
Citizens, like Barbara from Brazil, say they feel at home in Ireland. But can Irish people still say the same about their own country? In many towns and cities, locals feel their communities are changing too quickly, with little say in the matter. So let's ask the tough question. Is Ireland still Ireland? Or is it becoming something else, something unrecognizable? And most importantly, who really benefits from this rapid demographic transformation?
Irish and tired. And he said, I grew up on a council estate. There were hard people. However, we looked after each other. Yeah, of course, because, you know, you were still of the same ethnic and racial group. So you didn't, you know, there was at least that unity, you know, at least, right? And that matters. It matters a lot. You know, like, if you're of the same race and ethnic group, like, you know, you can still have fucking conflicts, but it's not like you're trying to communicate with fucking aliens, you know? It's not like conflicts with straight-up aliens. Like, you know, when you got, like, alien races and shit, it's like, you know, you have 0% connection to them. And it's like, wow, it's just a hostile fucking alien in my backyard. Awesome. Great.
The people or the politicians? Because if the goal is national progress, then let's talk about policies that put Irish citizens first. But if this is about securing power through imported votes, then the Irish people need to wake up before it's too late.
This is the one that Odious was giving us there. Wait, well, what happened? Okay.
I am of the belief that the era of the politician must end. It must come to an end. It has proven unfruitful, and that is clear as day by the statistics and by what we see around us. It is straight chancery, and our appointed ministers have no history in the roles that they are appointed to. Our Minister of Finance has no history in accounting. Our Minister of Health has no history in the health industry. Our Minister of Education was never a school teacher. As an example. It is straight chancery we are dealing with. The era of the politician must end, Tucker. I am of the belief that the...
I actually had saved the Conor McGregor-Tucker talk thing. Uh-oh, checkerboard floor. Mason's identified. You get a lot of those fucking retards these days.
To pay our legacy media to push an agenda. They do not push facts. They push agendas. And...
You know, I've only been here 2 days, but I'm a little bit confused by it because Ireland is not like the United States in that you have an indigenous population of Celtic people mm-hmm. called the Irish who've been here since the beginning of known history. And so it's not like you were invaders. You were also never a colonial power. You never invaded anybody else. You didn't have overseas colonies. Mm-hmm. You just kind of stayed up.
Yeah, so there's no like alleged historical crime or whatever that they can point to and justify their bullshit. You know, that stuff is bullshit anyway, but they can't even, like, stretch it. You know, they can't even try that game. You know, they don't really have, there's nothing there's nothing that can like hold the Irish to. If anything, they've just been fucked with. I mean, even the potato famine thing. I mean, God's sake, that's why there's so many Irish that came to America in the first place, because of the fucking potato famine. And lo and behold, we find out that the potato famine had, let's just say the kosher fingerprints all over that shit, too. I need to look more into that. I don't want to speak on it too much. I don't really know all the details on that one, but I've heard of this and started to look into it a little bit. And, not good. Not good.
Down your island and brewed alcoholic beverages and...
At the best brewery in the land. Not to be. Not to be. Yeah.
Guinness and whiskey, but I mean, you never bothered anybody. Yeah. You don't have any national crimes to atone for. So I come here to Dublin, your biggest city, and not one advertisement on any public space has Irish people in it.
Yeah.
And it's clearly part of the same propaganda campaign.
Yeah.
Like, make white people hate themselves, make white people feel ashamed to be white. White people are criminals. It's like, okay, but why would they? Who's doing
not
that okay. to you and
not
why?
Okay,
like,
Tucker,
what is that?
Okay.
I feel since the turn of the crash, our government elite have been accosted into full-time globalist traitors of Ireland. And they take their orders from above. And it is not even them. They are being ordered, and the orders are coming down onto the people, and the people have no say. We need amendments to the Constitution. We need to remove this tight grip that the political elite have over the public, and that is it. And that is our goal here, eventually. I operate my businesses and my entire life on fairness. That is it. What is fair? What is correct? Our government elite do the absolute opposite. And it has to change. It has got to change. Our culture is being erased. You know.
And you have a very distinct 1,000-year-old or older culture that's based on Irishness, the indigenous population of the island that we're on right now, and they're being replaced at super high speed. So you have said immigration is treason, mass migration is treason. Describe the scale of it to Ireland and its effects.
Well, in the olden days, my family, the MacGregor clan, you know, treason is you're hung, drawn, and quartered if you commit treason against your nation.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's... What is going on here is an abomination, a travesty, and it cannot continue for much longer. As you said, we are an island unto ourselves, a small island, and we are being governed by a
small... He supports Israel? Oh, that's sad.
...small people who are in turn being governed by another minute group of people.
Who could those be? Who could this minute group of people be? All right, let's go back to somebody who's not a supporter of Israel.
Hammers and possibly even knives to bludgeon their way into that conference to silence people. We cannot allow a political organization which is the lifeblood of the nation to be at the mercy and whim of communist mobs, of leftist mobs. And so, on Skin or Shute, the National Shield, the SN, is here too and will be going forward to make sure that the Irish people in the first instance get an opportunity to hear what it is that we have to say. That we.
I think I want to jump back into the actual IRA conflict. So this was something funny too. This fucking faggot. This is great. It says Joe Biden accuses supporting the IRA, 1986. What the fuck?
Democrats resented the treaty being used to pay the British back for their loyalty.
If they want to trade favors, then I would respectfully suggest that they owe us a whole hell of a lot more than we owe them.
If you take the literal language of the treaty as proposed by... As supported by the administration and supported by your government, we would have to have exported George Washington.
Senator Biden denies what? That opposing the treaty amounts to supporting the IRA.
There is no animus on my part toward the British, Mrs. Thatcher particularly, or the government in power.
This is Doc
John. There is no sympathy for the provisional IRA. There is just the concern that in our English jurisprudential system, that in fact, hard cases make bad law, and this is bad law that I don't want to have to live with for several generations.
That's a weird weird clip. But anyway, let's get back to the actual conflict here. This is from an actual documentary that was like made amongst the IRA and then like hidden away and then found again, basically, called The Secret Army.
Here came a preset.
Building a bomb.
Connect one end to the battery terminal and the other dead wire to the terminal on your timer. We will set them, say, for 5 minutes, you know. Mm-hmm. You clearing this?
Yes, that's fine.
Is any more, are you doubtful of anything at all? What are they going to tell me? Yeah. You know who your target is. And you know what to do.
The struggle for an Irish Ireland, free and Gaelic, stretches back 800 years into the Celtic twilight. Yet no phase has lasted longer or been more intense than the one now being waged in Northern Ireland. In a pattern forged a century ago by Fenian tradition, the Irish Republican Army has redoubled its effort to subvert the authority of England over Northern Ireland and assert her independence.
I've always been taught by nuns since I started school, but I'm taught by the Sisters of Charity now. I do commercial subjects and languages. They're always very useful. When the war's over, I'll have something to stand by me. My education, because I can't go on like now for the rest of my life. I was brought up in the Catholic faith, and my parents are very religious minded, especially my mother. She always taught me to pray. I normally help with the housework. Just ordinary chores about the house, like cooking, cleaning, that sort of thing. I am a member of an IRA active service unit in the Andersonstown area. The whole family is in the army, except my father and mother. I have two sisters and three brothers in the army now. The parents are very understanding. They're very security minded. I think they worry in case they say something wrong. In case we do something wrong. Mother always says to me, you're going to end up in Armagh jail, but I don't think so.
There is a red-haired girl.
I'm going to skip some of the, like, you know, artistic segments here. Okay, let's see.
Right, lads, this, of course, is your first recruits class. And you've completed the necessary forms. So I'd like to go into conditions of membership of the IRA. Of course, these are subject to you being approved as a member, but nevertheless, I'd like to go into them. Now, one very important aspect is good character. Now, it is very important that the volunteer in the Irish Republican Army is of good character. That isn't to say that we expect every volunteer.
With the intensification of the bombing campaign in Northern Ireland, recruiting to the IRA soared dizzily. Area commanders had to turn down large numbers of volunteers who had come forward to join the organization. Training facilities were scarce, and the IRA could only arm and maintain a limited number of active service units.
Or if you're not.
The volunteer was, therefore, made to go through a series of induction classes intended to test his patience and, in fact, to discourage him from joining.
We also take into consideration...
Only a select few were finally accepted. The rest were turned away, kept on standby, or placed in reserve.
For various reasons. There is one reason in particular, which we find is unsuitable. That's a man that's motivated by hatred. Now, hatred as such, as you all know, it's really a momentary thing. It's an emotion which peters out fairly quickly. And if you should become a volunteer in the Irish Republican Army and you are one, and motivated by the hatred of England, well, then you won't last very long. And certainly we would regard it as a waste of time to take a man into the Irish Republican Army who is motivated by this alone. It has to be much more than that. As a matter of fact, he'd want to have a very sincere and genuine reason for joining. It's for the love of his country and the love of its people and the desire to see it free and united and a better country to live in.
This here, 303, is the standard weapon of the Irish Republican Army. And contrary to popular belief, it's the 303 which is standard, not the Thompson. Now, we'll be going into the details of this rifle and the working of this rifle later, but before we do that, I want to pass around these other weapons so that you can get the feel of them. This one we're passing around now is the US carbine.
Recruits are smuggled south and west across the border where they undergo basic training before returning home to spread their knowledge. Classes consist largely of arms handling, bomb making, and urban guerrilla tactics. The instructors are IRA veterans who have come out of retirement to pass on their knowledge of previous campaigns to the new generation of rebels. Weapons used by active service unit in the northern conflict have been secured by IRA organizers with great ingenuity and daring. Some were brought into the country from the United States and Western Europe, but most have been acquired in raids on British military barracks or clashes with troops in Belfast and Derry. This is why most of our
men prefer. Apparently they sourced some of their hardware, some of their weaponry from the organized crime families in the United States. Apparently there was some of that going on. Like they would do some gun running to Ireland for the IRA. There were some, especially Irish gangsters, that were into this sort of thing in a big way. What's the guy's name? The one they made Black Mass about. Name's going to come back to me in a minute. Whitey Bulger. The whole Whitey Bulger gang. Like they were, let me just see if I can find even that, because that was a whole thing too. I don't have time for that day because we're in a short one today, but Yeah. It was the Winter Hill Gangs. Hunting IRA gun smugglers. Wow. This is the British forces doing that.
This is part of Ireland's Ho Chi Minh Trail. Day after day, several thousand British troops are involved in the thankless business of patrols and roadblocks. The chances of a gun runner being actually caught red-handed are virtually nil.
So less than 100 gunmen will be able to keep 7,000 British troops and the rest of Northern Ireland on the knife edge. In the area patrolled by the 17th 21st Lancers, which covers about two-thirds of the total border area in Northern Ireland, there are 112 crossing points, only 9 of them official, with customs posts, which are open from about 9 in the morning until 6 in the afternoon. So, in fact, it's virtually impossible to seal off this border. And in the 2 years that the Lancers have been here, they haven't come across any guns being run across the border. But that doesn't mean to say that there aren't any.
Everyone knows that guns have come and do come across the border from the south, but the constant army patrolling by helicopter as well as on the ground keeps the traffic within limits. On the other hand, the army are the first to admit that in country like this, there's no way to stop men walking across the border at night with a load of weapons and being met on the other side by a contact in a car. This is one of the 150 unofficial crossing points on the 300-mile border between north and south. There's nothing to show that you're actually crossing the border. And there's no customs or police post anywhere near. If you like, it's part of Ireland's Ho Chi Minh Trail. Army patrols may come here on a snap check basis once or twice a week, but the chances of a gun runner being actually caught red-handed are virtually nil. And so, day after day, for 24 hours a day, several thousand British troops are involved in the thankless and boring business of patrols and roadblocks. The roadblocks upset everyone, however politely they're carried out. For the Lancers, or anyone else for that matter, there's precious little death or glory here.
Well, I have complaints to make, definitely. I object personally to the British being here. Okay, fair enough.
But although they seem unproductive, the patrols may become more rather than less important in the weeks ahead. There's evidence, the police say, that the IRA extremists known as the Provisionals or the Bradyites are stepping up their training in the south. So on the face of it, this would suggest more trouble for the British Army. Although senior officers claim that they've successfully prevented the Provisionals from unleashing anarchy in Belfast and making the capital ungovernable. However, that...
You really do have some great fictional depictions of this stuff. It is.
Shannon! I'm all right! Jesus Christ, have the fuck!
Give it to them fucking
right
Jews, they made a pretty good reason.
Thank you.
watch that movie, I guess. That's The Devil's Own from 1997. Yeah, there's a lot of like pretty crazy fictional depictions of that shit. I was looking for the Whitey Bulger thing. Like, they have a things on that, but we don't have time for that. We got time for that sheet. All right, back to where it was at.
Maybe one.
No, that's also the wrong thing. Where was I?
Consider she can follow. That is an explosive. No, you can wrap that around your chili mate. Or in your mind. And you attach the black fuse, tape it on to the cortex. When the detonator explodes, it will explode the cortex, and the cortex in turn will detonate the gelling mate and convert it. That causes your explosion. Now, when dealing with explosives, they're stable, but it is necessary and vital that you adhere to safety precautions. And that no matter how long you're handling explosives or how much explosives that you handle, that you always treat them with the care and the respect that's due to them. Because you'll only make one mistake with explosives, and that's usually a fatal mistake.
Yeah, it's your one and only mistake. Yeah, for sure, dude. There was this research chemist in Northern Ireland that lost his hand in the IRA conflict. And he was like in this like permanent pain of like the ghost limb thing. And he found out that like ketamine was the only thing that like worked for it, but it had all these other problems. Like it like fucked up the bladder and all this other shit. So he literally like invented his own version of ketamine called MXE or methoxetamine. And like, this is fucking crazy. Like there have been like spiraling consequences from all this shit. White people were the most fucked up ones.
The Republican movement epitomized in the Sinn Féin organization and its military arm, the IRA, has persistently survived in the face of failure for over half a century. Its goal has been, and still is, a united Ireland without compromise by means of physical force. Its president, Rory O'Brady, is a teacher.
By telephone last Saturday.
I have served in almost every capacity in the Irish Republican movement in the past 22 years. On the military side, from being a volunteer right up to headquarters staff, member of the Army Council, Adjutant General and even Chief of Staff.
Our Belfast has been no response so far.
I travel a good deal. I often succeed in getting home on Sunday. When I come home, I try to spend some time with the children. Six is a good number by what are called modern standards. The eldest is now 11. The youngest is just over a year. Four boys and two girls. But we seem to move from one crisis to another, and it doesn't make one the best of company in the house. I like to go to church, go to mass. It's a unifying factor, which helps a lot. Besides that, on a personal note, the belief in the hereafter gives one certain inner strength. When Black Monday came along, and internment and the civil disobedience campaign was started, when the entire nationalist population withdrew consent to be governed through the colonial institution at Stormont, then it was war.
Yeah, they had enough of being pushed around. It's not surprising. I mean, what would you expect from them? At some point, people just had enough being pushed around. That should never be surprising.
General Army Convention of the IRA shaped policy to meet that. The Army Convention is a type of Congress of the democratically elected delegates from the various units of the Army throughout the country.
The Army Convention is the supreme governing authority of the IRA. The convention elects an executive of 12 members, which meets in secret and elects the Army Council. The Army Council appointed Chief of Staff Sean Moxley Fawn. Sean was chosen because he had the quality of single-mindedness of purpose which the situation demanded.
I keep in weekly contact with all the northern OCs and the people in the active service areas, and I personally review operations over the past week and give direction and instructions for the coming week. There are operational queries to be dealt with, intelligence reports, seeing the financial people. You also have problems of discipline. Recently we had to step in and do rather severely with some of our own people who were getting out of hand. They were drinking too much, and we banned drink in the active service areas except for them. They have a night off a week, and then they're only allowed to drink in moderation. We have men and women from all walks of life in our organization. We have people with university degrees, we have people, say, with a secondary school education, we have people who have just finished primary school. The men are mainly idealist. They've joined the IRA mostly through conviction, because they agree with the aims and objects and methods of the IRA.
The basic unit of the IRA is a five-man unit, which is known as a section. So many sections constitute a company. Three basic companies constitute a battalion. Three battalions constitute a brigade, as is the position which obtains in Belfast. There is a Belfast brigade.
And as you know yourself, it takes in wrong.
Well, if it gets too hard, you know, you can give the word for your area commanders to open fire.
Very good.
Right, Sean. Sean, what a full detailed military setup from the number one battalion area.
Well, as you know, this particular 1st Battalion area, the British Army haven't as much as cracked the surface of it, and it worries them because they wanted to get into this area. The military strength in the area is quite heavy, you know, but they are still only coming into the area in armoured personnel carriers. Any time these vehicles come in with the back doors open or anything, the snipers are opening up on them, and the military have received quite a heavy casualty in this area. As far as our fringe area is concerned with unionist extremists, most of our trouble will probably come from the Finnegy area.
You're not too bad. In the 1st Battalion area, you think you could contain any backlash very, very simple?
Oh, well, we can hold any backlash in this area with three of our companies and another leave. The rest of the battalion in reserve if it's needed anywhere else, you know.
Interesting seeing their paramilitary planning in action. Mr. Stoney, what's up, man? Oh, fucking thing. Take me a while to get used to this. Stoney, he said, look at Sinn Féin now. They are all open borders, anti-fascist, and super gay. Traitors. Yeah, I mean, that's a big risk, right? Is when they become a mainstreamed political operation, the faggotry enters. The people being bought off enters. The compromises enter. And before you know it, little by little, they're all into the, oh, well, you know, maybe we should have a few migrants. And, you know, fascism maybe is a little bit. I don't know, gay is good. You could see that it slowly kind of ticks down until they get there, right? I'm assuming that's usually how it happened. I mean, I don't know the specifics, but I'm sure probably how it happened. Usually is. I don't know. Maybe in their case it even happened quicker. Who knows? But you'd have to have an Irishman that knows to tell me. But it's sad, and that's kind of what happens when a lot of these like dissident parties become mainstreamed. They compromise, and they compromise hard. Often that's how they become mainstreamed. Really, it's like they are kept out of mainstream politics. The big Jewish money blockade keeps them from getting involved, and then they're finally given their ticket in, but that comes at a price. That price is compromise. They have to compromise all their principles. They have to compromise all the shit that they really stand for, and before you know it, they're all pro-open borders and all this other gay shit. That's not good at all. Very fucking bad. That tends to be how it works pretty consistently. Hail Stoney. Hail Stoney! Yeah, it's fucked up. It's really fucked up. Hey, for supporting the show, Stoney, and please, if you do watch on Odyssey, please do use the entropy, because, well, Odyssey's been broken by fags and glow niggers, so we need to carry things along all the same. They just can't be tolerated, these fucking glow niggers.
The CIA niggers glow in the dark. You can see them if you're driving. You just run them over. That's what you do. Fucking CIA niggers.
Hell, Stoney. Yeah, it's true. It's true. They got corrupted and they got compromised. And this is what happens. It would be really interesting for like some kind of data nerd to really track it, like the course of political parties that came from a sort of dissident space or a militant space, and they slowly became accepted in the mainstream political system of their country, and to sort of track like the degradation of their ideological values, because I'm sure it happens. And, you know, it probably happens always, pretty much. It would be really controversial to do that, even with the NS DAP. I'm sure that even that was not maybe as hardcore as it started as in terms of principles. But I don't know. Maybe that's not true. I don't know. It'd be interesting to just track it all and see, you know. You'd have to have some weaponized autism that's like above and beyond my pay grade for weaponized autism, but that would be really kind of a interesting project to see how that all works.
The whole campaign through all its stages has been very, very successful. British propaganda posted up that we had run out of steam and we were defeated. But we were well on top of the military situation. Our volunteers, our firepower, our armaments are the highest that ever has been in Belfast.
The active serviceman fights under constantly changing conditions. Therefore, he must evolve tactics suitable to his own needs on an almost daily basis. The British troops are his main objective, their billets his legitimate target. Belfast, a city of seething neurosis, savaged by mobs and violence, gutted and razed. Belfast is a city under siege. It awakens every morning to the martial sounds of rumbling Saracens and crawling Land Rovers.
The vigil, which has never stopped throughout the night, is now intensified. The British soldier, his weapon at the ready, sets out to face the unexpected. Where would the gunman hit next? Where would the bomb explode?
Smash like bigots! Fight glowmates. Smash the pit. Fight. Jump ahead a little bit to some more discussion here. Let's just begin out here.
Ed, you know, was that I was caught, that they that they'd caught me. I mean, I wasn't scared of being shot or anything. I really wasn't. And I heard the boots coming across the gravel, and heard them, you know, heard one of them shouting, "Here's one of the bastards here. He's dead." So they all came running over. I could hear the boots coming over, standing around, looking down. And I looked up, and I looked up, and I says, "I'm not dead." One of them put a rifle up against my head and cocked it, and said something about finishing the bastard off. It was then I said, "Look, I'm a girl, you know." So I don't know whether that saved me or not, but I thought I was ashamed afterwards, you know, such chivalrous tactics. But anyway. I was put into a Saracen, and
it looks like a Bill. It looks very similar to a 300 Blackout, the 388 arc or 338 arc cartridge. It looks very very similar to a 300 Blackout round. It looks a little fatter and snub nosier. That thing Hornet. Yeah, I'm 18. Fuck off. It looks very kind of blunt-tipped. Optimized for reliable recycling with supersonic and subsonic loads. Loads! You said loads! Ah! Yeah. So there you go. I mean, they haven't released hardware for that, have they? This is just a brand new fucking cartridge. It looks like they got a bunch of partners, so I guess this means BNT is going to drop one, CCMG is going to drop one, Geisley is going to drop one, Noveski is going to drop one, Maxim, PSA, BWS, Smith & Wesson. Wild. All PSA, the 300 Black mixtape already dropped, so probably a few months, the caliber is new. Wow, okay, cool. Well, you know what they say about special fucking calibers for rifles and guns, right? That shit costs a lot of money. Yeah, I mean, like, hey, what's the $3 a round cartridge worth anyway, right? Who doesn't want to empty a $60 clip, you know, like, you know, magazine, actually? That's weird. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I guess it's the idea is it's probably supposed to be optimized more for, like, suppressed use, right? I think that's the idea, right? It was supposed to be like one and a half times more energy than the 300 Blackout. Okay, so yeah, it's like an idealized version of that, I guess. That is crazy. Like the bullet is almost the same length as the fucking cartridge itself. That's nuts.
They all piled in afterwards. They were terrified. They really were absolutely terrified. I suppose they thought there were snipers going to open up on them or something. They all piled in, and I was lying on the floor. And some of them were real pigs, you know. I kept saying, "Is she dead yet?" And what should I say? And they made some dirty remarks too. But I don't want to say that. There was one, funny enough, there was one who was okay, and he actually told the rest of the other ones to stop walking on me, to leave me alone. But I heard them all saying, "Is she dead yet? Is she dead yet?" And it suddenly occurred to me that I might be dying, you know. It just hadn't occurred to me up to then. And I said.
I have no idea what she's talking about. Wait, let's move on. I'm looking for more like their military tactics.
The fella in the cover car, that's the two. Five.
Thank you. Osmosis.
Outside the building. The guard in this car will take the bag containing the bomb into the building with two cover men behind her. These two men will hold up the staff. The third man in the car, he will guard the door on account of somebody coming into the building. He will hoist them on in.
Like 70s, like I don't know, it's some kind of weird. I don't know. I feel like it's like a Brady Bunch vibe to it or something. It's a very weird, like, you know, bumper music between segments. This is strange.
While getting people cleared of the area after a warning, the bomb was between 20 and 30 pounds of explosive. In Londonderry.
Yeah, it's a good job. Everything's quite okay. Working up.
We went in, and I was if they got a drink or something. We came back out again, got into the car, and came up here, we transferred the stuff into a grip, made up, fix it, primed it, went down, took a different route the second time, went back down again, started up, set the charge. When we took off again, we were coming back again, we were followed by a speed cop and motorbike.
Was there anybody inside the
boat
when you
sent in
the second
time? There was a fella there holding
the shower. Did he see you at all?
No.
Did anyone see
you?
No. Well, the simple fact is that the young lad who goes to mass on Sunday as a volunteer sees the necessity of neutralizing the economy, the artificial economy of the 600 states. Therefore, when the morning goes on, plants a bomb. Before he sets out to plant that bomb, he takes every precaution possible to ensure that there will be no civilian casualties resulting from that bomb. One cannot be completely satisfied that the element of responsibility is totally removed, but yet one bears in mind that eventually that the innocent civilians pay a price. That price is not in vain, that from that sacrifice, a better form of society will evolve.
The people in the north of Ireland are tired and exhausted, and they think any further violence at the minute is unnecessary. No matter what development that we have in the north, whether it's getting rid of the border now, and we're going to have a 32 county unity, or whether...
What was that?
That was an explosion. I would say that was a heavy bomb of about 50 pounds. As heavy a bomb as I've heard. And as you notice, the military lorries are now making off. There's a depot just about 50 yards away from here. Well, whenever a bomb goes off, you can see the military vehicles coming out, and they rumble past this door at great speed. And it's usually late in the afternoon. You know, they knock off bombing around 5 o'clock. And it's very unusual to have a bomb going off here in the centre of the town, because the towns, the centre of the city, is deserted from fairly early.
The bombs which have been used in the last year have been of a sectarian nature and are alienating the Protestant community. They've been particularly against Protestant shops, business premises, etc. And while they may be disrupting the state and the economy or the government, they are also alienating the population, the Protestant population in the north.
Our people have been bombed and gunned now for 3 years, and there is a natural spontaneous reaction from people on the ground, particularly amongst the young people, to take action on their own part.
A rising wave of Protestant militancy has surged across Northern Ireland and consolidated into a powerful movement seeking to muster the strength of the majority. Its members have vowed violence to foil any political change that would loosen Protestant control over Ulster.
God, visit Ulster at this time. Remove from us the tyrant who would seek to take away our liberty.
I am opposed, absolutely, to a united Ireland.
We are now preparing to fight for our freedom.
Well, Ulster Vanguard was formed because of a disunity existing amongst the loyalist political parties as to how the situation should be handled.
Thank you for this opportunity to come here to Woodvale Park this morning. I do congratulate the organizers, LAWS, UDA, and all who have had a part to play in organizing.
Vanguard was a very loosely knit organization until quite recently, and now we have set up a command structure, if you like, and we have the leader, who is the Right Honourable William Craig, Member of Parliament. And then we have four deputy leaders. I happen to be one of the deputy leaders with William Hull, the Reverend Martin Smith, and Mr. William Douglas. It's such a vast movement now, and it's grown so quickly that we have to have it properly constructed and organized.
We have brought in a lot of non-political organizations who are prepared to make their stand in securing a constitution here that represents the majority in Northern Ireland. Vanguard today has in its ranks people who are socialists, people who would describe themselves as liberals, people who describe themselves as conservatives, or even right-wing Tories. People have got together, organized themselves into groups, done basic military training. Some arms have been brought in, not on a very large scale. I think there's a certain amount of wishful thinking, but as yet the arms have not been supplied. They're largely ex-service men. They wouldn't need a great deal of training, but the basic organization is there to create overnight an army once the arms are brought in.
In the loyalist ghettos of East Belfast, young thugs easily gain acceptance by using the bland excuse that their excesses are committed for the Protestant cause.
Young pugs! Young pugs! Let's go.
A youth gang who call themselves Tartans have used this formula to gain respectability and dignify their new status as keepers of the faith.
Well, I'm here to defend our part of town. You know, that's what we're being done, you know. That's why I stay here until Ulster's passing, sort of thing, you know.
The Tartan gangs, by and large, are born out of youth organizations that were identified with sport. And as the crisis worsened, they decided they would become involved.
And the Tartan group is a group of young people, essentially 12 to 21, 2 or 3 years of age. And these are just young people who are running about our cities and towns virtually without something to occupy their time. No one here hardly goes to a cinema. There are movies, as you call them. And so a lot of these people are running about the country without some real object in view. Now, they are the rising generation, and we are making use of them in the Vanguard movement. We are trying to have them disciplined and trained and organized to give them some real purpose in life. These people are, like so many other loyalists, determined that the minority group, assisted by the Whitehall organization, are not going to steal away their birthright.
An ordinary street gang is just there to create disturbances and fondling.
My software is freezing up. It's weird because, like, it's still piping through to the output computer, but like the main software is like straight up gray screen frozen. So I think that's about to be the end of the show there. it came back. See, that's what I get for trying to pull in the like plug-in. I was going to try to test that to see if it would clean up the audio, but for some reason it can't handle that. I don't know why. Yeah, I guess we're going to end anyway, but...
property, but we're there to defend our area against attacks by IRA gangs. If I can't live like a man, I want to die like one, and that's the way we feel. They're not letting us live like men, so therefore we'd be better off attacking them and dying like men.
The Provers are very dangerous people. They've got no moral standards at all.
What the fuck? Did you see that? What is that symbol there?
Just live like men. So therefore, we'd be better off attacking them and dying like men.
The Provers are very dangerous people. They've got no...
I don't know what it is, but I don't like it. I don't know what that symbol means, but I don't like it. It's highly suspicious, isn't it? Highly suspicious. I have to do a sequel. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, absolutely. I know what we're fighting for and against. That is fucked up. Why is it themed on a Jew star? Is that a reference to something, or is that supposed to be like a coincidence, you know, one of those coincidences, right? What's the story there? It's the Dodge Brothers. Yeah. Yeah, that's fucked up, man. That's fucked up. I mean, it's not even... The funny thing is, like, even that, like, is something the Jews stole. It's not really theirs. I mean, it's... You know, it's like... It's an ancient symbol. The Merkabah symbol is, like... It way precedes, like, what we know as Jews. It's probably more, like, ancient Egyptian. And they probably, like, walked out of Egypt with that in their back pocket. You know? But it's now represents them, so... You know? When I see it, I immediately do not trust. Instant do not trustism. All right, anyway, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there for now, and we're going to do some thank yous. We'll get out of here. We're going to do some thank yous. We're going to get out of here. Out of here! Out of here. All right. Let's see. Death to Stalin, that's right. Well, he is dead, so... Yeah, we could do it. Like, dude, I was actually very surprised at how much stuff there was on the IRA war, the troubles there. Very content packed on YouTube. Like, there's a ton of stuff on that. Actually, way more than I thought there would be. So, yeah, I mean, we could. I don't know if I need to, but yeah, we certainly could. Certainly could. All right. The Star of David, the Star of Remfan. All right. Let me see here. All right. Okay. Where do we go? All right. Patton 5, 3, 7. They all need to go back now. That's right. Send them on back. Wherever the fuck they're from. Let's see about these FTJ niggas. Smiles in Court is the only FTJ nigga today. Only FTJ. Sole lone FTJ nigga. All right. Let me see here. Let me see. Check a couple things. Yep. All right. Entropé. Mr. Stoney. Odious Patton. Rebel Science. Salute to you all. All right. That's it. If you're on Rumble, I'm going to just send you on over to Black Pill myself. If you're not, well, I'm sure the link will be dropped in the chat. So. We're gonna do that. I'm gonna go do some other stuff. I'm gonna go relax, probably edit some video, other kind of things, other things and stuff. But in the meantime, should probably check that out. I don't know what it's about. He's got a Black Wall Street thing going, so that's gonna be funny. The fact they think they had a Wall Street is pretty funny. You know what it was, right? Like it was basically like a black district of shops and shop owners, and they had like a little bit of a trading market, and they're like, it's our Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not really. Like that's a bit of a stretch there, blacks. That's a little bit of a stretch. You guys are pushing that definition a little hard there, buds. A little fucking hard. But all the same, thank you to those who support the show as possible because of you. Everybody else, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. I should just do the whole show like this. What do you think? Just do like, I'm barely here. I actually found out the system I use to do the little talkie-talkie thing like that can actually handle video. It's pretty cool. Check it out. This is where ending anyway. I might as well fuck around. All right, let me see. Got to add in the video. You can do some pretty cool stuff with that, actually. Media, video capture. Ultra, ultra, ultra. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's see. Want to go there? No. Want to go there? Aha. Yes. Yes. We got to turn this up because you can't see it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me down a little bit. It's too bright. Too bright. But this. I was even thinking about doing it this way just because it's kind of neat looking. I go like that. And you drop this. And then do some pretty cool stuff. Another thing I was using, but I was using something that made it all kind of like distorted. It was kind of fun. Kind of artistic. Let's see, what's that? Oh, shit. That's not the one. Where's the one? These are one that was the other day. It was pretty cool. You got the scan lines, though. You can see the scan lines. Where's the thing? It's pretty fun. Let's see. It was... We got bad TV. No. This one? It's supposed to move with my voice. No, no. Oh, well, I lost it. I'll have to fuck with it another time. It was pretty cool, though. It was kind of fun. Kind of fun. A lot of kind of cool little interesting effects you can do with this thing. Let's see, so it'd be like glitch shifter? That's it. Oh, all glitching. You can do tie these things to the voice. Normal amount and vertical amount. Oh god, whoa, we are glitching. God damn. Glitch, 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 glitch. Would that be weird to watch the show and I'm like, oh shit, what's going on, guys? Whoa, it's just fucking glitching out. It'd be kind of cool, right? I don't know. Kind of neat. Kind of artsy, I guess. A lot of dudes have sort of like various artsy shit for their stuff. Randomized size, what does that do? It doesn't do nothing. All right, well, go check out Devin there and we will see you all Friday. Tex Bergen. What if I turn off this and I go just color mode? Tex Bergen. Spergen out. Spergalicious. Spergerino. What do you think? The cool thing is you can kind of switch them up, right? It can make... Turn off the video and go back to this, or turn it on and cover it up. Whoa, damn, bro. Kind of go back and forth. I think I might do it this way. It could be fun. What else I can get? I don't know. I could make it better. I can get kind of artsier with it. Didn't really plan to do it, but, you know, it could be cool. Tex Bergen. Yeah, it could be cool. It was a little weird. I mean, it's just kind of fun, but it's also nonsensically useless. Yeah. Whatever. All right. With that, we'll see you soon. Take care of yourselves. We will see you on Friday. Good night, everybody. McSpurgs. That's right. McSpurgs. All right. McSpurgs and McSpurgs. That's right. Damn right. All right. We'll see you soon. Good night, everybody. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. Thank you to supporters. You make it possible. Everybody else, thanks for tuning in. Share with your friends. No matter what, doesn't cost you nothing.
One truth can